Live from New York, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to learn about ultrasound, healing, wounds fast, and fighting infection. University of Sheffield. Algae, quinoa, legumes, all your best alternative protein choices. Consumers should seek a variety of fiber sources to get maximum health benefits, St. Catherine University in Canada. This is your brain on fried eggs, University of Montreal. Wow, scrambled brains. Antidepressant trials exclude most of the, quote, real-world patients with depression, University of Kansas School of Medicine, and much more on health and healing. Then we have a variety of topics we're going to explore. Which private prison company made more than $1.7 billion in profit last year? Wow, how'd they do that? Well, because they're guaranteed by the state to keep these prisons full. What could possibly go wrong when a state has to fill prison beds? We ask a bunch of young Americans how student debt impacts their lives. Their responses you'll find interesting. Also, hey, for all of you who heard Hillary is going to lower taxes and take away those pesky types of limitations on corporate America, nice speech yesterday at the news school. I used to teach there. Well, I'm going to give you the primer on this. How to avoid income tax, just like the 1%. We'll have a little look at that. Though for those of us who believe we should be paying our taxes for the common good of all people, we resent the idea that as long as you can afford the right tax attorneys and accountants, you don't have to pay any taxes at all. Also today, who owns Hillary Clinton? Hillary Clinton smears the BDS in sycophantic letter to an Israeli billionaire. Ben Horton will talk about that. And if you don't know what the BDS is, stands for Boycott, Divestment, Sanctions. It's about time. Also, I'm sure you've all heard of the rants from MSNBC and other places about this is terrible, the front page of the New York Post, this is terrible. Is it? Well, we'll take a look at what's really terrible about what's going on and take an honest look at the Middle East. We have a lot to share. No guests today, more time for listeners. And I'm going to set time aside for people to be able to call in today. And we have a number that you'll be able to call in. I'll give you that in a little bit. Let's begin. You couldn't believe how many people die of ulcers. In one recent year, it was over 88,000. Now, first, they're preventable. Secondly, they can be cleaned, and you can use different compounds, whether it's direct ozone, intravenous vitamin drips, topically applying, let's say, Manuka honey with colloidal silver. There's no reason for anyone to die. But according to the University of Sheffield in the United Kingdom, healing times for skin ulcers and bed sores can be reduced by a third with the use of low-intensity ultrasound. Now, researchers from the University of Sheffield discovered that ultrasound transmits a vibration through the skin and wakes up cells in wounds, helping to stimulate and accelerate the healing process. Now, the ultrasound treatment, which also reduces the chance of wounds getting infected, is particularly effective when treating diabetics and the elderly. And a quarter of diabetics suffer from skin ulcers, particularly foot ulcers, due to the loss of sensation and circulation in the legs. Quote, from the study, skin ulcers are excruciatingly painful for patients. In many cases, can only be resolved by amputation of the limb. Using ultrasound wakes up the cells and stimulates a normal healing process because it is just speeding up the normal processes the body deals with this and with no side effects, no risks that are associated with drug treatments. And because ultrasound is relatively risk-free, we can expect to see it in broad clinical use within 3 to 4 years, end quote. And this was published in the Journal of Investigative Dermatology. It was also, they had researchers in the University of Bristol from the Womb Biology Group and Cardiff Institute of Tissue Engineering and Repair. So this is a serious study. Now, here's a side effect. I have seen very low level ultrasound used to stimulate collagen in the face and in the body and tightening up the skin. Therefore, in effect, a non-surgical facelift. In fact, just about anywhere in the body where the body is having sagging and dimpling, you can stimulate the underlying tissue to rejuvenate. And that is very helpful for a lot of people. We all need protein. We all need the building blocks protein called amino acids. Now, here's what we have to understand. An amino acid is amino acid. The source of the amino acid is what's important. Now, you can have your amino acids come from beef or from pork, chicken, fish. Or, as a vegan, you could have them come from quinoa and legumes like split pea, brown rice, non-genetically engineered soy. Or, according to the latest PAWS Biosciences research, algae. Now, those who remember over 25 years ago, I held a press conference. It was an all-day event to discuss what I just completed 3 years of in-depth analysis. A little background on this. And there were 1,700 people at this particular conference. How do I know? Because we had books there, and all the books were gone, and we had hundreds of people didn't get them. We had 1,500 books, but every seat was taken. What was it called? It was called the Egg Project. Why the Egg Project? Because I was doing research as a scientist at the Institute of Applied Biology, and I was curious about something. As a registered dietitian and as a clinical nutritionist, board certified, and as someone who always wanted to know what's in the food, and I just finished this major research project showing that you can really judge the quality of a food not just by its nutrients, but by its vibration, its energy. And I was working with some research scientists from around the world who had different instruments where we could measure this, and especially this Italian researcher. In any case, I started foods were either zero, little energy or no energy, to 10, the best. And I found that healing and rejuvenation occurred 9 and 10. But optimal health was 7, 8 also, and then, of course, higher. And okay, but not optimal, was 5 and 6. Below 5, you really couldn't sustain healing or health. And the average American diet was 0 to 3. So that's why it was easy for me to chart and predict what person's health would be like based upon what they drank and what they ate, in addition to how they dealt with stress and their exercising, with no consideration at all for genes. Because I and a lot of other people have always known, it really doesn't matter what you're born with in 98% of the cases as far as your genes, because you can exceed the genetic expression, meaning you can change it. The epigenetics can change. And now there's a whole field of science that can prove this. At that time, we didn't have epigenetics. The word wasn't even coined. We had what was called psychoneuroimmunology. In other words, what you think you can create biochemically in your body, good or negative. And so I was thinking, how is it so many people that don't have meat or rarely have meat or have very little meat are still able to live longer lives than the average American by a substantial margin and be healthier? And I wanted to do an analysis of what was in brown rice. So I studied the brown rice and I did the amino acid profile, and I found that I had made an error. Not a problem. So I asked Dr. Berman the next day, could you just double-check this? I made an error. I'm not sure where. I'm just looking at the amino acid profile of brown rice. So the next day when I came in, there was a note on my desk no error. I said, well, we're both wrong. So I did it again, and again I came up with the same result. This time I gave it to a different person and asked them, would you check? And they did. So by the end of a week, I was stuck with this odd thing, and I collected all the textbooks, including my own, not the one I had written, the one I had studied and graduated through dietetic school in nutrition, and this was a clinical and therapeutic nutrition textbook, and it's used in every nutrition class in America. I mean, it's the standards, the Bible, very orthodox, and it clearly said that only animal proteins were complete, giving you all 8 essential amino acids, and that fruits and vegetables were incomplete, and some things were very incomplete, like fruits. So I went ahead and started doing research on the other foods, and after a year and a half, I found that virtually all foods contained all 8 essential amino acids, but in different combinations, meaning they were complete, but they weren't complete at a higher level of utilization. You had to combine them. Let's say you had lysine in one that was at a 98%, and in another you had methionine, but it was only 32%, but then you had to have another one that was high in methionine to get the benefit of going up to 98%, so that you had a perfect profile right across. And by combining fruits and vegetables, nuts and seeds and grains and legumes, you could come up with wonderful combinations to be a vegan. In fact, there were 5,000 combinations that had more complete utilization of protein than any animal protein. And what was really remarkable in all of science, all over the world, in all of nutrition, all of dietetics, there was one law. It was called net protein utilization. And the standard was the egg. There was no food that gave you a higher utilization of the protein when you consumed it than the egg, hence the egg standard. That's why I called it the Egg Project, because I found 3 combinations that exceeded the egg. They went up close to 99%. So I had a Dr. Hildred Fiske, who ran all this through a computer system that I did not have at the time, and that's when I presented these findings, that for the first time, it was no longer myth or supposition. It was hard, hard, accurate science, that you do not ever in your life have to consume any animal protein in order to get your amino acids. And it was very popular. I remember a woman at the UN, one of the heads of one of the programs, called and said, what would this mean in Africa? I said, very simple. I can show you grains and legumes that can be grown there and pulses that require low water and can survive in high temperatures that when combined will give you better protein than any other source they're getting, and they're getting sources from the government agencies that include milk, and a lot of the people there are lactose intolerant, so the women having babies end up passing on that intolerance. They end up contaminating the breast milk with allergens. The baby dies of diarrhea, bad water. So it was a way that they could become food sustainable and healthier. Now, jump ahead till today. The highest source of protein that I found was spirulina. It dwarfed everything else, soy, everything. And right behind it, chlorella, 2 algaes. So that was 25 years ago. Now, keep in mind that this is the latest from the major scientific group. Quote, algae is evolving as the next new alternative protein source consumers are anxious to use, and can be used in a variety of products. And this is according to the Institute of Food Technologists in Chicago. Algae, quinoa, and pulses are considered by some food technologists to be the best protein sources and strong alternatives to meat consumption. They reduce food waste and help feed the world's growing population. Algae is a new vegan source of protein with a comparable carbon footprint to existing vegan proteins, such as rice and soy. And it contains 63% protein, 15% fiber, 11% lipids, those are fats, and 4% carbohydrate, 4% micronutrients, and easily digested, considered heart healthy. It's found in many of these. Are consumers ready for algae as an ingredient? Yes, they are ready and excited about algae. That's what they said here. All right, good. And by the way, there are thousands of strains of algae, so I'm sure that they're going to find this. But just remember, when you sit down and you have some hummus with your chickpeas, or you have lentil soup, you have some black beans, you have some brown rice, you're eating complete protein. And these are gluten-free, and they're sustainable. But they say, gee whiz, it's new. No, there were millions of people, millions, eating vegan sources, including algae, quinoa, and legumes, a long time ago. But I'm glad the rest of them showed up. Just as an aside, the other day I was listening on our sister station, WBAI, and they were in fund drive mode, and we're all certainly there to support them, and I'm trying to do, in fact, even tomorrow at 10 o'clock in the morning, I'll be doing an hour just to help them on the subject of detoxification. And this person was talking all about, these people are all excited about these amino acids. And that's fine, not a problem. But making claims, health claims, about a product is a problem. And the claims made, I would challenge. So I find it's unfortunate that the foundation does not have a review, an independent review group that reviews all premiums to see what premium serves the interests of the listener and does not run afoul of making claims exaggerated or unscientific or unrealistic. We've already had that come through on many occasions with Kevin Trudeau and some kind of water. And it's time that people stop when they hear someone making claims about something will do something for cancer or other diseases and realize, stop before you pick up the phone and call. You do not know if it's accurate or not. Having a discussion in an open and honest way with a debate, that's what's needed. And I just wish that that happened before that particular premium, which I would challenge, was allowed on the air. Finally, consumers should seek a wide variety of fiber sources to get the maximum health benefits. From St. Catherine University in Canada, quote, consumers who get fiber from many sources, both naturally occurring, benefit more than people who limit their source to a single type, like psyllium. And they're suggesting that 38 grams a day for men and 25 grams a day for women. I believe that they're grossly understating it. I agree with them. You should get your sources from multiple places, like blueberries and raspberries are very good for very soft, almost a gelatinous cleaning of the intestine. But then nut fibers are good, and they can remove a lot of debris in the intestine and colon. But I would say 50 grams for men and 40 grams for women, if you really want to be healthy. Now, I mentioned at the beginning of the program, there was a study from the University of Montreal about this is your brain on fried eggs. Quote, high-fat feeding can cause impairments in the functioning of the mesolimbic dopamine system. So says Professor Fulton, University of Montreal, and her research group. This system is a critical brain pathway controlling motivation. This was published in the peer-reviewed journal Neuropsychopharmacology, and it has important health implications. Quote, our research shows that independent of weight gain and obesity, high-fat feeding, there's your American diet, can cause impairments in the functioning of the brain circuitry profoundly implicated in mood disorders, drug addiction, and overeating. Several states and pathologies that impinge on motivation, end quote. Well, I remember sitting at a Indian restaurant that I don't believe is any longer there. Very nice one over on the east side. And Robert Atkins, my friend for about 30 years, we had completely different philosophies and disagreed on diet, but there were a lot of things we did agree upon. And he was having this huge amount of protein and fat. And I said, should I call 911 now or wait till after the meal? He just laughed. And there I'm having the vegan dish, and he's having lots of animal fat. And he's, oh, Gary, the fat, your body needs this fat. I said, that's arachidonic acid fat. Yeah, if you want fat from olives or coconut or flaxseed or avocado, yes. If you're getting your fat from trans fats, fried foods, barbecued foods, grilled foods, first, you've altered the fat, and secondly, it's not a kind of fat that the body breaks down and uses easily. You're getting inflammation. Well, here we have it all these years later, from the University of Montreal. Your brain gets scrambled when you eat these saturated animal fats, and yet that's what people crave. And from University of Missouri Columbia, exercise may reverse age-related bone loss in middle-aged men. So men, if you're between 40 and 55, weightlifting programs, muscle strength training, getting out and doing your aerobics, that will help prevent bone loss, and that's important. Also, I just want to mention this. This is from University of Kansas School of Medicine, and published in the Journal of Psychiatric Practice, quote, more than 80% of people with depression in the general population aren't eligible for clinical trials of antidepressants. Why? Wow. So here's what people don't realize. When they're trying to sell you on television an antidepressant, they're excluding depressed people from their trials. They're using healthy people instead of people with depression. That's gaming the system. That is fraudulent, in my opinion. And right here it says it and published it, yet no one's going to know about it, and that's the bad part. Tomorrow, get your dream hair by eating these foods. Which are they? I'll tell you tomorrow. I'm Gary Nall. We're going to take a break and come back, and we have a lot more to share with you. Please stay with us. I'd like to welcome all of you from all over the world, because we have people everywhere listening now. Now, if there's any reason that you're out and about and not listening over your regular terrestrial land station or over the internet, you can always be listening by any kind of cellular phone or portable listening device. Let me give you the phone number to call in, 712-432-7231, 712-432-7231. We're going to ask you your opinion about what we're about to play and call in and share your comments. What do you believe we should do about the student debt in the United States? It's impacting the parents, grandparents. Some people never thought that they would end up having their Social Security or their pensions or their life savings taken away or in some way impacted because of student loans that they co-signed on. And that's the reality. With compounding debt, some people have a $100,000 debt. By the time they pay it off, they will pay $200,000. Congress, the President of the United States, are on the side of the banks and the lending institutions, not the students. So you're going to hear this in a moment, and call us in. Here's the new call-in number, 646 490-5448, 646-490-5448. And by the way, for the person who was the so-called expert talking about why we should purchase that particular amino acid, you know, a miracle, what, I don't know what it was called, miracle aminos, I'm inviting you onto my program to debate me, just me, you and I. So you're making all these claims. I wish to challenge them in a polite, diplomatic way. Let the audience decide if this is really a miracle. So I invite you, with the host of the show that had you on this program, call later today, speak with my producer, Richard Gale, and let's get you on the air and debate. All right? Then let the audience hear. Listen up. We're going to have a big showing of Saving the Planet, Huntington Arts Cinema, Sunday, July 26th at noon. And for members out there, it's only $10. The public's $15, a regular movie ticket. And I'm still going to give you a free copy of the film. I support the Huntington Arts Cinema. They play art films, and they're like the Thalia or the Angelica here in New York City, or the Quad or the Film Forum. Anyhow, let me give you the number to join me in 2 weeks Sunday, 631-423-7610. 631-423-7610. And we also need to, if someone has a van, we're going to be officially opening our new offices and studios and closet on Monday, next Monday. But we have a door we need to bring. And if someone has a van, can help, call 646-926-5422. If you have a van, can come in and we'll pick up a dorm, put it in. And we're in the final days of cleaning everything up. 646-926-5422. Listen now to what students have to say about the impact of student debt on their lives.
Try my debt as cumbersome.
Crushing.
Inflated.
Astronomical.
Overwhelming.
It's negative. I'm chained to something for the rest of my life. I have a total of $28,000 in student debt. I have nothing to show for my degree. I have nothing but a huge amount of debt.
I have around $30,000 worth of student debt. It's kind of like a dark cloud that hangs over you.
I currently have probably right around $180,000. I have a law degree, but I am not currently using it.
$280,000 in student debt, and by the time I finish, I'll be at about $300,000.
It brings up a lot of shame. Yeah. It's hard to talk about, excuse me. Because I should have known better. But what I knew is I really wanted an education. I have a 17-year-old. She'll be starting school soon. I'll need to borrow for her. Will I ever get married? What would it mean in partnership?
I wanted to study being a medical assistant. I really enjoyed helping people. It really takes a toll on everything. You know, I don't want to share with people, like, I got a lot of debt. Sorry. It's discouraging. It's embarrassing. I mean, I'm 22. Like, I shouldn't have that much debt. I'm the first person from my family to go to college. And I don't have anything to show for it.
I currently have $81,000 in debt. I didn't end up finishing my degree. When I did get loans, they were never enough to cover rent and food and school, because the school costs so much money itself. So I ended up sleeping it out of my car, which made it much, much more difficult for me to do anything at all.
Education was stressed to me from as early as I can remember. Like, you know, my parents are both immigrants to this country, so for them, getting a college education is like the holy grail. I do not think that education is worth it. I think nowadays you can teach yourself a lot of things just from the internet and YouTube.
I don't think that I knew the full weight of what I was getting into.
The smoothness of the financial aid office, the sort of crisp cleanliness and the efficiency of it, didn't leave a lot of space for me to think about what I was doing. When I was living on student loans, I saved all of my receipts. Then I cast them in bronze. It's almost like as if my debt is like this little weapon. This is a debt rock. And so I feel like, you know, it's something that could be thrown. It's also something that potentially could be worth money.
It says that it'll take until 2036 to pay off my loan. Yeah.
I mean, it would probably take 30 years, and that 180 would end up turning into probably 250, 275 at the end of the life term.
I've seen estimates anywhere from 4 years if I sell my soul and work crazy hours and make a lot of money, or if it's a little bit more sane path, it might be 8 to 10 years.
I would pay as much as I need to pay to keep my credit, like, not completely f***ed.
I already have anxiety, and it certainly doesn't help. I feel like I've missed out on being able to almost achieve, like, the quote-unquote American dream.
Those are just some of dozens interviewed. We have 15 million students who have staggering debt, or their parents. Over 55% are living at home. Could you imagine what this does when a person looks at the type of work they're getting? If you're the average person, there are some who are able to make a good living, but the vast majority are not. Frequently, they're working for a payback at $25,000 to $50,000 debt in a field where they're making minimum wage or close to it, where they didn't have to have a college degree to begin with. And we're not addressing this as a society, and we should. Your chance to give us your input on this, please give us a call. The number to call in, 646-490-5448. Let's say hello to Robert from Manhattan. Hi, Robert, your turn. Robert, you're on the air. You got to.
Thank you so much. Should I speak now?
Go ahead, please. You're on the air. Speak.
Hi, this is Robert, responding to the Gary Knowles Show. Our government and Wall Street, they have bailed out banks. They've given Wall Street welfare. And they have put numbers of gambling casinos, off-track betting, with the guise of helping education. I think... Hi, Gary. I think that the students should be given a pass.
Okay, Robert, unfortunately, my engineer didn't tell you, or you didn't listen. You got to turn off your radio when you call in. So we're getting feedback. But I got your point here. I appreciate that insight. I'm going to hold my thoughts until we have other people call in and give us theirs. What do you believe should be done about student debt? And when you call in, listen over the telephone. Please turn off your radio or you'll have to be disconnected because we have a feedback loop, all right? Now, while you're calling in, we're going to go to our next tape. And this, again, is a short one, but very relevant and very important, about which private prison company made more than $1.7 billion last year alone. And what does that do to making minor little offenses criminal offenses? And what does that mean when historically we wouldn't have a debtor's prison and they were banned in the 1800s, 1900s? Now we have 47 major prison systems for private people, meaning you miss a payment on a parking ticket, you end up in prison. Let's listen to this, and you can also respond on this as well.
There is an industry here in America that wants to lock you up for as long as it can. The more people it can warehouse in cages, the more money it makes. And which private prison company made $1.7 billion last year alone?
CCA, or Corrections Corporation of America, is the largest for-profit prison operator in the United States and currently has around 90,000 privatized prison beds in around 20 states. They get paid per day, per inmate at their facility. What this does is it provides an incentive for them to maximize the number of people incarcerated in their for-profit prisons. It's like the hotel industry. The hotel industry wants to keep their beds full as much as possible because it means more revenue. Same thing for the private prison companies.
About half the people in American prisons are in for nonviolent offenses, and we have more people in prison than any country in the world.
CCA has a vested interest in mass incarceration because that's how it generates its revenue. It's how it makes money for its shareholders and corporate executives.
Now that states across the country have budget problems, CCA is masquerading as the solution by offering to buy all their prisons.
CCA and other private prison companies say that they can save money because they know that's what politicians and policymakers want to hear. Some studies, including a 2010 Arizona State Auditor report, found that private prisons actually cost more than public prisons once all the corresponding factors are considered.
Even worse, CCA's proposed contract with 48 states would guarantee a 90% occupancy rate for 20 years. How could a state guarantee that? By making sure harsh laws are passed.
CCA has spent nearly $19 million lobbying federal officials on a host of issues.
It has put millions more into state and federal elections, and it works with ALEC, a group that pushes pro-corporate legislation. ALEC wrote more than 85 bills to promote prison privatization and increase sentences. One of these bills was Arizona's controversial SB 1070.
The law allowing police to stop someone for looking Hispanic and detaining them if they weren't carrying proper papers.
This law was almost word for word as ALEC wrote it. And you thought that was all about keeping immigrants out. Nope. It's about locking immigrants up.
This is a moral and ethical issue that we should not be locking people up so that companies can generate profit.
All right. Your thoughts. What should we do? Should we abolish debtors' prisons? Should we stop this nonsense in America of giving people citations and fining them? What about asset forfeiture? $3 billion last year. And by the way, those were for people who had committed no crime. That's where the police pull people over. If they liked your car, they stole your car. If you had any money, they confiscated your money. They even took people's homes and businesses. All without a single person being charged for having stolen these. And we call it asset forfeiture. Why aren't we doing anything about it? Why aren't we even discussing it? Does it happen to have, do you have to be stopped? Do you have to have the money in your wallet taken before you finally realize it's an issue? I'd like to hear your thoughts. Our number to call in today on these issues, 646-490-5448. Remember, turn off your radio. Listen over the telephone. If you don't, we'll cut you right off. Let's say hello to a gentleman, Benjamin in Philadelphia. Hi, Benji. You're on the line.
Hello?
Yes, you're on the... Please speak up.
Hello, Gary. I think it's a... this whole debt problem is deep down at spiritual problem. How can anybody give out all these loans and then expect people to work at high paying jobs and which pays more money to get the whole thing? And then it's not everybody goes to medical school. So if you're working at a job, if you're getting these loans, then it doesn't make sense that everybody's going to be able to make a job to make money to pay it back. I think we're not looking at the foundation, the spirituality, what people need. It's the whole foundation, the whole picture doesn't make sense to begin with. Do you understand what I'm saying?
I understand what you're saying. And Benjamin, you've made a couple interesting points I'd like to focus on. First, look at the problem by breaking it into its pieces. Historically, the way you got ahead and had a standard of living where you had a home that you could own and provide for your family, and only one person in the family had to work. Do you remember that? When you got home, generally had dinner around 5 o'clock. People ate together. You could go on vacation. You didn't have credit cards. You didn't have cell phones. People actually looked at you and looked you in the eyes. There was something called manners that's non-existent today, unless that person still maintains them. A sense of appreciation, gone today. A sense of entitlement, rampant today, and a sense of, it's not my business, I don't care, and it's someone else's issue. Not true at that time for a lot of individuals. So you have to remember the culture we're in cannot be separated from what we do. They're one and the same. So if you get people the idea that you must go to college today, in our time, it was important. You did have a better life, you did have a better chance to educate your children if you went to school. Today, at least half the kids going to school should not, in my opinion, go to college. Should not. Going to a trade school, learning specific trades that they enjoy and can profit from, yes. Because what are the things that you're more likely to get hired at? Only service jobs, and they pay minimum wage, and you have no control over that. Whereas if you're a painter, if you're someone, a plumber, if you're a craftsperson, if you're a trade person, you're more likely to be hired, even though those industries that they once were a part of have been offshored. So why don't we bring that into the equation? If we were not offshoring jobs with these really, I call them economic genocidalists. Let me repeat that. Economic genocidalists. They cause economic genocide. The Henry Kravises, the Silverstones, the Apollo Group, these equity partnerships, the hedge fund managers, they make a lot of money. Yes. They're surrounded by technocrats who are willing to do anything because they have no moral equation to deal with what you said, a spiritual issue. Well, if you have the people running the country who've already sold their soul to get voted in because they're insecure and they're sociopathic and will lie, look at all the people in power, all of them in power. They're all defective persons. We don't elect spiritual people to any place. Maybe I'm wrong, however, Benjamin. Name me the last spiritual person we elected to anything in the United States.
Abraham Lincoln, possibly? I don't know.
No, I could share a lot of issues about Abraham Lincoln, good and bad. Religious, yes. Spiritual, not from my equation. But I'm talking about in the recent past.
No.
Okay. What does it tell you when the answers we need are spiritual-based issues? I'm not talking about religion. Spiritual, based upon morality, ethics. Do I make a profit and you lose in the process? That's a spiritual issue. An ethical person would say, how can I possibly make money if I'm exploiting you in the process of doing it? So when you have these people coming in, then they want you to go to school because they want you to take out loans from their companies. And if you are a person that doesn't have a regular paying job or you're making too little to support yourself and you can't pay your bills, you go to a payday loan. Do you know how much the interest can be if you miss a payday loan?
For you, I don't know.
Can go up to 1,000%. 1,000%. Now, they make most of their money when people are late on their loans, have to roll over their loans, can't pay them. That's when they thrive. So, if we had ethical people, we would have had a moratorium on home foreclosures. We would reduce all student debt, take away all interest. After all, who are these people giving outside the federal government? Who are these people who are supporting the students? They're getting their money for zero, and they're charging. So if you're charging someone, let's say 6%, and you got it for zero, you're making a huge profit, and then you compound it when a person's late or can't pay. If they don't have work, they can't pay it. So why not simply forgive all debt? Let me give examples. Goldman Sachs, we forgave their debt and gave them billions, $900 billion. Citigroup, think of all the money they get in their credit cards from late fees. We gave them $2.3 trillion. So you look at all the major banks that are exploiting the population on student debt. We bailed them out. We, the people. We didn't get a single thing in return that is advantageous. Just like Greece. Who bailed out Germany after World War II and forgave their debts? Spain and Greece. Who invaded Spain and Greece? The Germans. Who were the Nazis, the Gestapo, the SS, the Luftwaffe, that decimated, kills hundreds of thousands? The Germans. Who forgave them? The Greeks and the Spanish. Who won't forgive people today? The Germans. Kind of remind you of how times change, but attitudes don't. So unless there's universal debt forgiveness, I mean universal all debt forgiveness and completely abolished derivatives, then you're going to have debt peonage lasting into the future. And what if you also said no more companies can export jobs by buying companies, downsizing them, and then taking it to India, China? You do that, you no longer can sell anything in the United States. But as long as we keep saying, oh, good, you mean you're going to take our factory that's been here for 120 years with 3,000 employees, and you're going to strip it of its assets, and you're going to make us all go on unemployment, but we, thank God, will be able to go to Walmart and buy some cheap crap that we don't need in order to save money. You're going to have us buy it made in China from work that we used to do. I mean, we can't wait till the next Walmart opens. So who's shopping in Walmart? Who's putting money in their banks? Who's using their credit cards? Who's watching their television? Who's eating their Wonder Bread? Who's buying their gym shorts and sneakers made in Bangladesh at slave labor? We are. So exactly how does this 1% and 99%, I'm confused. Maybe you can answer that for me. How are we separate from the people that we empower and enable? We are not, until you understand how connected you are. So in my opinion, unless you have an education specific to a career goal that is out there now with jobs available that are paying living wages, then better to wait, because all you're going to do is be one of those students. I appreciate your call. Does that make sense to you, Benjamin?
So you put it in more detail than I was more abstract. Yes, it does.
Abstract or not, you made an important several points, and I appreciate you calling in.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. Let's say hello to Howard from Forest Hills. Hi, Howard. Howard, you're on the air.
Gary, I'm against debtors' prisons, but there is a ray of hope. A man by the name of Morris Dees from the Southern Poverty Law Center, who we most know for getting involved with hate crimes, has actually succeeded in getting debtors out of prison.
Okay.
And I'm wondering whether that is the potential answer, at least in part.
Well, look at it like this. Would you rather prevent a cancer or look at all the different ways you can treat it after a whole nation has become cancerous?
I would say both.
I would say get rid of the debtors' prisons and stop. Get rid of at least 2 million laws on the books. You shouldn't make jaywalking a crime that could put you in jail. You shouldn't make giving the finger to a cop a punishable crime. You shouldn't have crimes that you're resisting arrest, but you did not create any crime to be arrested.
But is there the will to do that?
No, there is not. Not at this not time. We are not in enough pain to do anything at this moment in the United States.
Because I believe that if the people who run the debtors' prison see that there is an advocate for the debtor, so-called debtors, and they're succeeding in getting them released, that could act in part as a deterrent.
Show me a single deterrent that works. The death penalty doesn't work. Nothing works. There is no deterrent. The only deterrent that you have that can guarantee you some principled way of living are ethics and morality that associate the sacredness of life.
We're devoid of that in this country.
We don't have a smidget at the corporate level, zero at the political level, that we have an abundance of that as individuals. It's just a matter of working together and using that. And that's where your activists come in, by closing down the systems, not trying to modify or moderate a system. You can't reform something that's bad. If it's bad, it's going to stay bad. And we've seen how everyone plays that game. I appreciate you calling in. Thank you very much. Let's say hello to Brian from New Jersey. Hi, Brian. Your turn. Brian, you're on the air. Please speak up.
Yes, hello?
Yes, you're on the air.
Okay. As far as the education, we should be like many other countries, like Finland, Norway. You get the education for free for a 4-year degree. There's many other options besides as a 4-year degree. You could go to a trade school, become a plumber for a lot cheaper, very good money. I've become a yoga teacher in less than a month and making good money just teaching yoga. as far as we withhold all loans until the whole loan system is done more appropriately. And if you really want to make a change in this country, we should withhold all taxes. Because the only thing that corporations and politicians listen to is money. And if you or everyone withholds all their taxes, you're going to see changes real quick.
Okay, let's break what you said down. I compliment you for suggesting that trades, I said that earlier, trades are very important, and what you can barter for fair exchange, there are lots of talents. I know someone recently went to a dentist and did painting of a dentist's house and in return got dental care. There's a lot you can do with trades. However, look around the world and what they're doing with education. They have public education. Real public education, as we once had, and it doesn't bankrupt anyone. It's more often than not free, but nothing is ever free. So how do they fund it? They fund it by having a certain amount of taxes that come in. We have the problem of everyone who has money knows how to not to pay taxes. They avoid taxes. For example, I mentioned yesterday on the program, Walmart has managed to plant $62 billion outside the United States, so it doesn't pay tax on it in the United States. $33 trillion are sitting in offshore accounts in tax havens like Luxembourg and the Canary Islands. So what do you do? What is the solution? Well, my CPA spoke to me yesterday. She is teaching in Vietnam, in Saigon. And she says, Gary, she says, she's also a teacher upstate at a university. She said, you can't imagine the discipline of these students, the care of their parents. These kids really are smart. Mind you, these are kids that for a long time, no one ever thought they would be educated because we remember Vietnam. We forget about afterwards and the rebuilding of their society, including their educational system. She said, I'm motivated and moved when I see that they take nothing for granted. So, what if we did this? What if we had one flat tax, anywhere between 15 to 20%, that every single business had to pay, no deductions allowed, no CPAs, no 70,000 pages of tax laws that you can work around. Whatever you made, you had to pay it. And it didn't matter where you made it, you still had to pay it in the United States. Now you're looking at enough money each year that would pay for free education for every single person in the United States to go to any higher education they wanted, clear up through a medical doctor. That's what's possible. If you reapply the taxes and have a percentage of those taxes go for that education, that is one way to approach it. Not the only way, but it's one way. I appreciate your call. Thank you.
Thank you.
Let's say hello to Nicole from Brooklyn. Hi, Nicole, your turn.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Gary. I thought that we needed a young female perspective. I heard a few males call in. And I just wanted to mention how I'm 30, I'm from Brooklyn. I'm considering going back to school. How I did not finish my four-year degree, and I have been working and making enough to where I didn't see the need to be in that sort of debt. But I can't fathom a country or my country that would squander money in frivolous wars and then not invest in education. And at this point, I feel a four-year degree should be a universal right. Like, we should all be able to obtain a college degree for free. And looking at other countries that are accelerating in education in both math and reading and seeing our decline, I'm wondering at what point are people going to be outraged to say something about this?
Let's focus for a moment because we only have a moment. You've made three points. When people are outraged enough, we have outrage But the outrage has become internal rage, and you must distinguish between what a person does when they feel so frustrated in their life, 265 million Americans, that they're living at or below the poverty level, they can't get out, they're in debt peonage, they're the ones going to prisons because they can't afford their bills, they're the ones who now have a criminal record and are having to pay for a probation officer because they couldn't pay a ticket. But that hasn't happened to policymakers or opinion leaders. If that happened, if the things that are happening to those people happen to the people on Wall Street or in the banking community or higher education, then it would have been dealt with. But as long as someone can make a profit off someone else's suffering, then as long as you're sponsoring war, which is very profitable and very necessary for the millions of people who profit off that war, not just the stockholders and the executives, but the shareholders in that, and then you're not going to have common sense, reason, and decency, what you're asking for. Otherwise, we'd have a single-payer universal insurance instead of the debacle of Obamacare written by the insurance industry. So we have to separate ourselves out from those who guide us and give us programs based upon them or their associates making a profit versus not looking at a profit but making it a better world for all of us. Nicole, thank you for calling in. I appreciate your response. We're out of time. I want to thank you all for listening in. I look forward to sharing more tomorrow. And tomorrow, I will give you a personal commentary on history and food. I think you'll find it interesting. And I'll also respond to all the headlines screaming how America sold out to Iran. I'll share a different perspective. Have a nice day, everyone.